The White House has released guidelines for a phased reopening of the country, advising states to relax their restrictions as they see a decline in COVID-19 infections. But that plan relies on effective testing for the disease, which is still not widespread in the United States.
Which is one reason many are desperately hoping for an effective treatment. And this week, researchers at the University of Chicago Medicine reported the results of a clinical trial for the drug remdesivir that could be promising. 113 people with severe COVID-19 were given daily infusions of remdesivir, and many have now recovered. For more, we're joined by Mark Lipsitch, professor of epidemiology and director of the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics at Harvard. Professor, what is remdesivir, and what do we know about how effective it is given the news about this trial?
Well, it's an antiviral drug that was being manufactured already by Gilead for other purposes, and that is being tested to see whether it has activity against the new coronavirus. This trial seems like it may have promising news in the sense that a large number of the patients seem to have gotten better, but it was not a controlled trial of the sort that we usually insist on before making decisions about using medications, because there was not a group of patients who were given a placebo or a comparator. It's encouraging, but it's not definitive in any sense.
Well, we remember President Trump repeatedly hyping another drug, chloroquine. Several studies of that medication have now raised questions about its effectiveness and possibly severe side effects. Is there a risk of overselling the effectiveness of remdesivir?
I think clinicians understand that when you're in an emergency, you start to accumulate evidence, sometimes not initially of the highest quality. I think there are trials being done and others planned to look at this in a controlled way. So I think we will get a better sense. That's going to determine whether there's overuse or appropriate cautious use.
If it does, though, prove to be safe and effective, how quickly could a drug like that get out across the U.S. or around the world such that it would have a significant effect in ending this pandemic?
Ending this pandemic is a lot to ask of a drug, especially one that's used intravenously to treat relatively sick people. What it might do is reduce the severity of the pandemic so that we are less fearful of having people get infected because we have a better treatment. No drug is distributed equitably around the world in normal times, and certainly a drug that's just being ramped up is going to be scarce for some period of time. Even if this drug turns out to be extremely promising, it would be a major step forward, but it's not a solution to the pandemic.
Something else I want to ask you about. Officials in Wuhan, China, where the virus originated, revised upward the number of deaths due to the coronavirus by 50%, attributing another 1,290 to the death toll there. There are also reports the death toll in Europe is likely far higher than first reported. Do you think we're undercounting the death toll from COVID-19 right now?
Yeah, I think epidemiologists have been pointing to the challenges of estimating the death rate for a long time in this pandemic, and in the absence of very good testing, and also for some other reasons, we're going to be undercounting deaths. But I think everyone was probably a little surprised by the magnitude of the Chinese announcement.
There's also reporting today about the mortality rates from COVID-19 from place to place. In the United States, it's as high as 7% in Michigan right now, 10 times higher than the reported rate in Wyoming, where just 0.7% of people known to have had the virus have died. How do you make sense of that? Is that just about inadequate testing?
I think some of it is about inadequate testing and these uncertainties in both the numerator and the denominator, the number of deaths on top of the fraction and the number of cases on the bottom. If you don't detect mild cases, which nobody is doing to a first approximation in the U.S., then the denominator is too small and the death rate looks too big. But on the other hand, if you miss deaths, then it can be the other way. But it's also clear that different populations have different distributions of risk factors. So we know that age is a very large risk factor for fatality, as well as for infection, or for symptomatic infection at least. And we know that certain underlying conditions that are distributed differently in the population in different populations are, such as hypertension and obesity. Everything is going to be a combination of differences in reporting and differences in underlying risk factors. It's also should be said that there are seem to be large disparities, say, within cities in the United States in just the proportion of people who have gotten infected. And understanding the reasons for that is also urgent. Clearly, it seems to track disparities by race and income that affect other aspects of health.
That is Mark Lipsitch, who is director of the Center for Communicable Disease Dynamics at Harvard. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.